And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls with James Whitaker as we're talking about his incredible works, Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. And let's check in with you and find out how these things are working for you. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, James Whitaker with us. Good job, by the way, James. Very good. What got you into this area? I mean, you've been in the financial planning business for a while. How'd you get into the, I'll call it the motivational area?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of the antithesis of the motivational arena because I feel like there are so many unscrupulous people in there. But I basically got into personal finance and financial planning in Australia, and it made me realize that people who might be in successful professions actually know very little about managing their money. And it was then I realized that managing your money was still only one piece of the equation. You really need holistic success if you want sustained success. That's really what enabled me to basically get into this field.
Absolutely. And since you've been doing it for a long time now. What has been for you the most satisfying aspect of what you do?
I think just seeing people's transformations, like having people who really feel like they have no hope, to basically let them know, not only to give them the inspiration and motivation to succeed, but also to see it happen in real time is very, very satisfying. I mean, of course, there's a bunch of different, it's nice to have a book out and different things like that. But to me, it's all about the transformation that occurs as a result of the people doing the work themselves.
Absolutely. And since you've been doing this, what kind of response do you get from people?
It's great. It's what I try to focus on is making sure it's very action-oriented. It's very results-oriented. So even during my speeches, I get people to set alarms. So things like when we know that 4 out of 5 people have failed in their New Year's resolutions just 6 weeks after they were set. So I like to get people to set a calendar note 6 weeks after New Year's Day so they have a reminder to check in on their goals. So I like to do a whole bunch of different things to make sure it's action and results oriented.
What do you think holds people back, James, from success?
I think the biggest one is not having the time, that real reflection to think about what it is that they want. Now, that can change fairly regularly. So with my clients, I actually get them to fill out a success plan template, which is also available on my website, where they can basically figure out what they want in 6 different categories of their life. And for most people, almost all of them, it's the first time they have thought about what they want in such comprehensive detail. And these are people who might have successful corporate jobs or people who might have these different things. But if you feel like you're treading water or you're not living with purpose or with passion, you really need to take that time to check in with who you are. So think about your values and your mission and everything else, and think about where you want to go. If you can focus on those 2 things as a starting point, that's what enables you to create more detail around creating plans to follow. Because you might have all the inspiration in the world, but if you're going in the wrong direction, you can actually do more harm than good.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you can misinterpret Think and Grow Rich in areas like that, can't you?
You can't. So people, an example is everyone thinks that success, that you need to work really, really hard to be successful. But there's millions and there's billions of people around the world who work really, really hard but aren't successful. You need more than that. That's where having an attribute like resourcefulness can be really, really important.
All right.
And that's a lot of the things that we talk about in Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite of Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, is how do the most successful people in the world harness that will to win, and what do they do to become resourceful enough to create the circumstances that they want? And a big part of that is rechanneling. It's redirecting the energy that they use to complain about their circumstance, which most people in the world at the moment particularly are complaining about their circumstance, when they redirect that exact same amount of energy to creating the circumstances that they want.
Which of the two would you have loved to have met, Napoleon Hill or Andrew Carnegie?
Well, probably Andrew Carnegie, just to go straight to the source. Napoleon Hill, they both would be amazing. There's no wrong answer out of those two options.
Right.
I would probably say...
It's like saying, which of your children do you love the most? You can't pick.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
James, I just love this topic. comment and two questions. One is Arnold Schwarzenegger. My comment, he didn't have any contacts when he came over. He didn't really know anybody.
No, he did this all on his own.
Yeah, yeah. But my question would be, my first question would be, okay, when you have, at a personal level, not a business conference, your own elephant in the room, how do you know that maybe you've blown up the issue out of proportion, or maybe it is that much of a problem? Like, that would be my first question. My second question would be, you know, the rotating reasons for why you're doing something. I'm thinking, you know, I spent a lot of time running and stuff like that over the years, and I think one of the reasons that I've approached so much time for this is I can do it by myself. I really don't need anybody else to do this. You know, well, if I want to play basketball, I have to find the time and the place, etc. You know, so this is like a good activity that I can self-generate. Now, I haven't thought of that reason until I was making this phone call, but that is one of my lead reasons, actually, for doing this. So I was going to ask you, how much do you contemplation do you put into your reasons for what you're doing?
It's a good question. I want to touch quickly on what you said about Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I actually included something in one of my books where I was talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, where he said, if I had listened to the naysayers, I would still be in the Austrian Alps yodeling. He is a fantastic, I love that quote. He is a fantastic example of figuring out what you want and going after it. I mean, getting that role in Conan the Barbarian, where they said if they didn't have Schwarzenegger, they would have to build a machine because he just had that perfect physique that they were after. And so you were talking about, it's interesting you were talking about with your running, Joe. It sounds like as a result of that, you've made it a habit. So anything that we've made a habit, whether it's a positive habit or a negative habit, it's very, very easy to stick with. And when it comes to habits, or forming new habits rather, consistency is more important than intensity. So if it's something as simple as flossing your teeth, you don't need to floss your teeth for 5 minutes a day. Even if you take that action of taking out the floss and flossing one tooth, and then the next day you do another tooth, and over time, between 60 and 365 days, that's when we can start to form these habits and change those patterns in the brain. So a lot of people don't recognize that consistency is important in changing those new habits. So once you've made the process automatic, the reasoning doesn't take as much of an emphasis because you're in autopilot and you need to focus then on the inspiration that's basically going to keep you moving forward. And then you can just surround yourself with the right people who can help you be more resourceful and resilient to see things through. Does that help answer your question?
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah. And also when just sizing up personal issues, like how do you keep a proportional look at them?
What do you mean by that, Joe?
I mean, okay, you say, okay, I have a personal issue or whatever, and are you putting too much emphasis on it or maybe not enough emphasis, you know? I mean, how do you do that? Put it in proper proportion or just live with the problem?
Well, how do you weigh the seriousness of what you're doing, James?
Yeah, well, First of all, you need an awareness of your mental state. So if you are in a negative mental state, you will automatically allocate a negative perspective on whatever it is that you're facing. So the first thing you would need to do is get yourself in a positive state. So positive motion creates positive emotion. So what I like to do is I go to the beach or I go and have a surf or even just a walk around the neighborhood or go and get a coffee, just something outdoors ideally to get in a good mental state. And then also checking in with two or three people that you trust who you know will give you an honest opinion can help you figure out whether or not you're blowing things out of proportion. And then finally, before you act, I would take a few deep breaths with your eyes closed and think about the situation. Now, what is the ideal outcome from that situation that you're trying to achieve? And what is the ultimate energy, if this involves another person, what is the ultimate energy you want to bring into that conversation that would achieve that outcome? So there are a few of the things that I do from a practical sense to help make sure you keep things in proportion.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hey, George, thank you for accepting my call. And James, your enthusiasm is absolutely contagious and jumps out of my radio speakers here. I'm going to ask a question and then a comment and then repeat the question. And the question is, did Napoleon Hill give his last interview with motivational speaker Tony Robbins? And let me explain on that. I have an audio cassette, and it's in Tony Robbins' Power Talk series. And the interview allegedly was 1989, end of 1989. The Power Talk interview was published in 1990, an audio cassette.
Well, Napoleon Hill died in 1970.
That's exactly my point. And I mentioned this 3 years ago with Mitch Horowitz, and he challenged me. He said, no, Napoleon Hill was dead. And so I called Tony Robbins' organization. They're located here in the San Diego metropolitan area. And I talked to a staff member, and I said, look up Power Talk interview number 4. I said, yes or no, did Tony Robbins actually interview Napoleon Hill, or was this an actor, or whatever? And she said, yes, it's in our catalog. She said, by the way, I have a meeting. We have a staff meeting with Tony Robbins himself. And I'll ask him. And she called me back a week later, and she said, Tony said that it was a true interview and that Napoleon Hill was over 100 years old when he interviewed him. They had to track him down, and they did publish it in 1990. It was Power Talk interview number 4. And Tony Robbins said, it was absolutely a true interview. He goes, but Napoleon Hill was living a very private life. And he even went further, according to the staff member. Tony Robbins said, if George Norrie's organization will contact me, I'm ready, willing, and able to do a radio interview with George Norrie if he contacts me. So I guess that's my question. Did Napoleon Hill actually give his last interview with Tony Robbins? He would have been over 100 years old. And
well, are you saying, Tom, though, that he did not die in 1970, or he did and was 100
according
years
to old? Tony Robbins, he was still alive.
Well, now listen to this. Tony Robbins would have been 10 years old when Napoleon Hill died in 1970. So even if he interviewed him before that, he would have been like 6.
Well, Tony Robbins contended that he interviewed him in late 1989, and then they published it. So anyway, I still have the audio cassette. It's a very old person who gives the interview, because my question was, is this an actor or is this actually Napoleon Hill? And Tony Robbins swore at this staff meeting at the Robbins organization, he said, no, this was, we tracked Napoleon Hill down.
Well, maybe he was being duped.
Yeah, that's the other question. Was he being duped or whatever? It was a very good interview. Napoleon Hill talked about the 16 principles of the law of success, and then he added a 17th principle. He said, I have not put this down in print yet. And basically the 17th principle was that it's all mental.
Yeah, Thomas, first of all, I love La Jolla and La Jolla Cove. It's one of my favorite places in the world, and I'm just up the 405 from you. Tony Robbins found his way to Napoleon Hill via Jim Rohn. So to the best of my knowledge, I've never heard of Tony Robbins having met Napoleon Hill in person. It's possible that there was a little bit of a loss in translation around that Napoleon Hill was very much his mentor through the written word, because I've certainly seen his original copy of Think and Grow Rich that Tony Robbins had. But I think George, what he said was totally accurate. And I, to the best of my knowledge, he's never met Napoleon Hill, because he died in 1970. And Jim Rohn was actually his conduit of finding Napoleon Hill.
Yeah, if Tony Robbins thinks he interviewed Napoleon Hill, somebody was tricking him. Had to be. Let's go to Paul, driving in Texas, first-time caller. Drive carefully. Hello, Paul.
Awesome, Madison. Thank you, Madison. Yeah. Have a great day, sir. Which way am I going? To the right?
Paul?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Paul, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air, Paul.
Hey, how we doing?
Good. Are you a police officer or something?
How you doing, George? I want to say thank you so much for having me on. No, sir. I just crossed the border back into the United States from Mexico.
Well, you be careful.
I was performing magic for some families that their parents had COVID.
Oh, good for you. Good
for
you.
No, totally. Everything was safe. Everybody had temperatures. Everybody was, it was all distance-based. It was just doing something positive for some families, some friends of mine that I met in Israel when I was studying to be a rabbi. Here's my statement to you about Think and Grow Rich, and that is I've been studying it since I was 10 years old. I became a hypnotherapist and NLP coach. I have 2 world records. I've traveled around the world. And when it comes down to the idea of success in itself, I've never, ever thought that success meant money. For me, success was always about relationships and how beautiful those relationships could be.
All right. Your phone is next to some machine, that's for sure. But he's absolutely right, James. It's not all about money.
That's right, Paul. We were actually talking about earlier how relationships were the one thing that have completely transformed my life and has given me every single opportunity that I've had today and I'm sure will enjoy in the future. And Andrew Carnegie wasn't focused on making money. He was making people. He was giving people the ability to help themselves, just like Think and Grow Rich has helped you, Paul, just like it's helped me and millions of other people around the world.
And I've got to say, James, since you've been doing this work, I assume more and more people have come forward to tell you about some of their stories.
It's huge. I've actually lost track of the amount of people whose lives have been completely transformed by Think and Grow Rich. And I mean, these are people at different ages, with different life experience, with different things that have gone on. It's a truly timeless book that is as powerful now as it was when it was released in 1937.
Paul, thank you for your call. Be safe driving back from Mexico now that you're into Texas. And, of course, we're going to come back in a moment and take some more calls. James, since you've been doing this, what's the future hold for you? What's next?
Oh, it's a good question. I've actually just got a new business helping people make money with their podcast, because a lot of people now in this world that we're in, they feel like they don't have a voice. But giving people an opportunity to basically say, to remind them and give them an avenue to say, yes, you do have a voice. The world needs your voice more than ever. But people struggle to make money from their passion. So that's what I've been doing, is helping people through a company called We Are Podcast to make money using their passion. So if anyone wants any help with that, they can reach out to me via my info on my website.
And we do that too in some respects, where we will put on emerging podcasters on the program to talk about what they're doing, because obviously they have no vehicle for publicity. And if they're dedicated to what they do, whether they're into ghosts or whatever, and they have that kind of podcast, we've interviewed them on the program before, James.
Perfect. I love it, George.
We're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. James' website, go to it, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in a moment with our special guest, James Whitaker, and take final phone calls as we talk about the legacy of Napoleon Hill and also Andrew Carnegie as well. On our next Coast to Coast program, George Haas joins me to talk about Mars and some artifacts that might be there. And then later on, ghost hunter John Kachuba joins us to talk about some of his investigations. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our final segment with James Whitaker. And by the way, James, thank you. You've done a wonderful job tonight. Appreciate
that. My pleasure, George. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's fun, isn't it?
Absolutely it is.
Nothing like interacting with phone callers and everything else. And Napoleon Hill and Carnegie would have been proud of you.
Oh, thank you very much. There's nothing like getting it done in real time. I think I love this more than anything.
Why would you say that Napoleon Hill's book continues to be one of the best sellers in the self-help industry? I mean, what's so special about this?
Well, I think certainly now it has this aura about it. But, I mean, there are that many people now who have gotten such amazing results. There's a lot of books and things that come out where people aren't sure if they're the real deal. But clearly, if a book has sold, you know, more than 120 million copies since 1937, and it's still on the top of many, many best-selling book charts today. I mean, it stood the test of time because of results, and I think it will keep selling extremely well for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. Let's go to Reno, Nevada. Annie's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure thing. Go ahead. James, you're on with James.
George, my goodness, what a privilege. James, I'm actively listening and very interested in understanding how this entire approach is applied to corporations in this day and age.
How does it work with a corporation, James? What do you do? Do you talk to the crowd or what?
Well, it's a very, very good question, Annie. So a lot of companies at the moment are focused simply on balance sheet. So they're saying, why don't we get rid of some of these staff, and then that will be better for the company's health and performance in the long run. Obviously, the assumption here is that every corporation, their job is to maximize profit for their shareholders. But in the book, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, we talk about companies like Costco, where their staff is paid double the national average, and almost 90% of them have company-sponsored health insurance.
Yeah.
So those are things that management of the company decided to do that would have been very, very difficult with a lot of other people sitting at that table to say, well, why would we pay these staff a lot more? Why would we give them health insurance if we don't have to? And the Costco share price has increased almost 400% in the last 20 years. I mean, there are companies like Chobani, the yogurt company, where once they hit $1 billion in sales, they decided to give away 10% of their company to, I think they had 2,000 employees at the time. I mean, having a...
How many companies do that? That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? So there are ways to do this where you align the exact same mission, which is a really, really important point here. It's this shared vision between all aspects of the company. Just like any goal that you want to achieve, your likelihood of achieving that is entirely dependent on the number of people and the quality of those people from a resourcefulness perspective, the number of people that you can recruit towards that shared mission. Because once they join your mission, it becomes the shared mission. So from a company or a corporation perspective, I would think about what can we do from top down, bottom up. What can we do to make sure every single person in the company has an alignment of shared vision and they cooperate in a spirit of, you know, they work together in harmony, in a spirit of friendly cooperation, giving them total access, and managers know what's going on in the trenches, and everyone is all unified behind a common vision. Annie, those are the types of things that I think from a practical application this thing can do for companies.
Amazon's looking for people now, and they're going to pay a small fortune for them. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, Amazon. I've got a good buddy of mine who works for Amazon. So they're hiring a bunch of people. I believe they went in after Whole Foods and they cut the health insurance for people who worked for Whole Foods. But I think Amazon, their idea behind what they try to do, apparently they're very tight with the perks that they offer their staff. I think it's hard to even get any decent tea or coffee or milk in the Amazon office compared to companies like Facebook and Microsoft that offer a lot more perks. But what Amazon does really well is they focus so much on maximizing that shareholder value and having that clear vision. So every single, to the best of my knowledge, I don't work there, but I believe every time you get to your desk, like literally every day you get to Amazon and your computer, it says, do you know what work you need to do today? Or words to that effect. So everyone is very, very clear on the mission and their role in that mission.
When Bezos put together Amazon, of course, it was just a selling book online company that just exploded. And I think his ex-wife was the one who was responsible for developing the business to go beyond books. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, it's an amazing story from a couple who were essentially working out of their garage. And I actually think a real testament of their character is the way that they were able to handle their divorce. I mean, how many divorces do you see that make the tabloids for year after year after year, but this was settled fairly quietly.
Right.
They both seem to be very respectful of each other, and I think that's a really good thing to do. But to basically become the wealthiest person in the world after selling books out of your garage, and books are a bulky...
Truly remarkable.
Yeah, difficult item to ship, and obviously a lot of physical inventory, but they've done very well. And even things like Amazon Web Services is a really significant arm of their company that brings in a lot of profitability.
What's interesting, too, is the bricks and mortar businesses of the past, like Carnegie's steel company, now you do it with the internet with minimum investment.
Certainly, yes, certainly the push to remote work. I mean, everyone's been talking about the changing face of work in the last 40 years, but it's really happened in the last 4 months that we've moved to a entirely new era of working at home. So I think it's really made people think about what is a good business. So to me, I think the two toughest businesses are a restaurant. It's very, very difficult.
Very difficult.
And a clothing company. I mean, when you've got companies like Amazon and H&M that can produce the exact same shirt that you're making, they can make that for 20 cents. It's going to cost you by the time you add in the shipping and the design, and you've got to go and either manufacture it yourself or get someone else to do that, and you've got to add the branding on, and you've got to tag it and bag it and all these different things. I mean, it's impossible to compete with these big companies. So I think a big lesson from COVID is thinking about what a successful business is and having something with very low, if any, fixed expenses and essentially a digital product that you can automate and scale. These are examples of good businesses rather than traditionally restaurants and clothing companies that have struggled, and we're seeing struggle even more, unfortunately.
Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina is with us now. Ed, welcome to the program.
Yeah, George, as usual, great show. And James, I'm really impressed with how you carried on new information and some of the success stories. And it reminds me, George, when you had the Edgar Casey guy on who was mine that and
yep.
come up with people, and it got a whole new generation of information. So I think it's – and I want to ask you, are you left-handed by any chance, James?
No, I'm actually right-handed. But
right-handed.
Well, you had a 50-50 guess there, Eddie, so...
Yep. Well, one thing for Annie, that new Nikola electric hydrogen truck, the guy's a high school dropout. He gave about $600 million or something of stock options a few weeks ago to all the people that hung with him.
That's great.
And 2 or 3 days ago, General Motors signed an agreement. They're going to spend $2 billion on it, use all of their facilities. They got a century of manufacturing behind them. They put a person on their board, bought 11% of their stock, so the chances of that truck succeeding just went up about 1,000%.
That's great.
And so that's what you're talking about, I guess, too, that Annie was asking about corporations. Some of these people do that. And I was going to mention Dale Carnegie. I had some health problems when I was younger, and Dale Carnegie, besides the How to Win Friends and Influence People, one of my favorite 5 books when I was suffering a lot with some chronic illness is How to Stop Worrying and Start Living that he wrote. It's short chapters. One example is you would concentrate mentally on, like in pain, you tense up. I'd lie down and you on the bed and tell yourself, let the bed hold me up, let the bed, and you just sink in it, and then you concentrate on relaxing your scalp and then your forehead and then your eyes and your jaw and your neck. And by the time you get somewhere further down, you sound asleep if you're not careful. And then Jose Silva used to do mind control, and not a bad one like Scientology, but a good one. And he used some science, which had to do when you close your eyes, I think the alpha wave goes away in the brain. And he was, I think, out of Texas, but a Mexican that filled up stadiums in South America, a la Billy Graham, except it was not really religion. It was self-help stuff. And he had ways people would turn to somebody beside them and put their hands over their head, not touch them quite, but do certain things to help get rid of a headache if somebody in the audience had headaches. So are you familiar with some of these people? And also Tony Robbins, one last thing. I think George hit it on the head at 10 years old because he had an overweight brother. My understanding, Wall Street Journal did a thing early in his career when he was a big success, and he kind of shunned him and didn't help him, and he just had about a bunch of people burn their feet walking over coals. They had to go to the hospital. So
didn't work.
Yeah, it's amazing the power of the mind, Ed, and I'm happy you've recovered from your health issues. There's a man by the name of Wim Hof who actually tried to, he climbed a great deal of Mount Everest in a pair of shorts. I mean, the power of the mind and the link between our physical being is something that we're still really scratching the surface on. But actually, in Think and Grow Rich, the Legacy, we talk about how it's now scientifically proven that positive thoughts lead to more constructive efforts too. So I think what the future will hold as technology and scientific evidence advances, we're only going to see stronger links between the power of the mind and the physical being.
First-time caller Ruth in Albany, New York. Welcome to the program, and good morning, Ruth.
Yes, good morning. Enjoying the guests so much. I remember the first job I ever got was in the sales department for a very high-end bridal company, and I had no experience, but they believed in me. So what did they send me home with the first day? A book by Napoleon Hill.
Uh-huh.
And I read it from cover to cover, thinking, it's the least I can do. No one else of the new recruits read the book. I asked them in the break room. Nobody bothered, but I read it. Guess what happened to me after I was there 1 year? I kept winning month after month, top salesperson. This was wholesale. By the end of the year, I beat every single outside salesperson, the ones who travel and show gowns.
Good for you.
And everything. I beat every single salesperson on the road, and every single salesperson in the building.
And did the company reward you by any means?
Yes, I got bonuses every time I won.
That's great. And you think it was the book that helped you?
It was a combination of dire circumstances. I had to get a job. I needed the money. I was a single mom at the time. And the fact that this book just gave me some great ideas. Just be yourself, be articulate, and don't overspeak. And never ask for a sale. That's one of the biggest things I ever learned. Never ask for a sale. You merely just suggest to them, and if you're in person and meeting them in person, you shove a beautiful pen towards them and give them, here's the papers, and most of the time they will sign for them.
They'll do it.
Yeah, but it's just a mistake to ask for the sale.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, Ruth, in America, people spend five times the amount of money on books. They spend five times the amount of money on lottery tickets than they do on books. And, you've got a 1 in 300 million chance of winning the lottery jackpot. But people can go and pick up a book like Think and Grow Rich or Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, or the new book, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, for $10 or $20 that will give you a massive return on investment, clearly like what happened with your life. And it reminds me of the quote that says, those who say it can't be done shouldn't get in the way of those who are doing it. You're a proven testament of someone who took the time to go and implement these things and consistently over time, which has led to these amazing results. So thank you so much for sharing that.
I think Napoleon Hill would have been a great radio interview, don't you, James?
Yes, certainly. I wish you could get him on, George.
That would have been fun. Well, sometimes we channel the ghosts and things. You never know. Might be able to pull that off. What's your next project, James?
So my next project actually is this event, We Are Podcast, coming up in November. So apart from that, just focusing very much on my own podcast, which people can check out. It's called Win the Day with James Whittaker. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and everywhere you go and find podcasts.
Good for you. How long have you been doing that now?
Been doing that now for about a year, but I just started interviewing guests. And the one next week coming out, I'm very excited for, because it's one of the top mindset and behavior experts in the world. So we're going to talk about how people can get rid of the old habits that are bothering them and start implementing some new habits that are going to help them transform their lives.
Fantastic. James, thank you for being on the program. You do keep in touch with us, okay?
George, can't thank you enough for the opportunity. Thank you so much for having a great show.
James Whittaker's website, jameswhitt.com. It's all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We've got a series of great programs for you all week long, so stick with us. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Benali, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.